Welcome to HorrorFatale.com, almost live, where sarcasm goes to the movies and snark watches TV, with your hosts, the Horror Fatale and the Diva Mummy.
Welcome to HorrorFatale.com, almost live. I'm your host, the Horror Fatale, bringing you this week's horror news, reviews, recaps, and information. I ask you guys to do me a favor. Please like and subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, and or Stitcher, or whichever platform you are listening to the cast on.
What are you doing here in Somerville anyway?
Honestly, my mom won't say it, but we're completely broke. And the only thing that's left in our name, this creepy old farmhouse our grandfather left us in the middle of nowhere.
Why'd you bring me up here?
Entertainment value.
What is that?
I don't know.
Somehow, a town that isn't anywhere near a tectonic plate, that has no fault lines, no fracking, no loud music even, is shaking on a daily basis.
Under the dining table, now!
Hey, remember that one summer we died under a table?
I found this in my living room.
Whoa, killer replica.
A replica of what?
A ghost trap? There hasn't been a ghost sighting in 30 years. New York in the 80s, it's like The Walking Dead. Your dad never mentioned this to you?
It's just my mom. My grandfather died. My mom says we're just here to pick through the rubble of his life.
Wait a minute. Who are you?
Call it fate. Call it luck. Call it karma. I believe that everything happens for a reason.
Come on, darling.
It has a gunner seat?
Should I be totally corny and say, who are you going to call? Well, who are you going to call again, according to the tagline? But that was the trailer for the upcoming Ghostbusters Afterlife, which will be coming to the theaters next year in 2020, July 10th, 2020, to be exact. And it's very cool looking trailer. You have to watch it for yourself if you haven't already. And it's, guess where? On HorrorFatale.com right now, playing for your eyeballs. It is very cool looking. In this incarnation of Ghostbusters, it stars Carrie Coon, Finn Wolfhard. That kid has got to be like the hardest working kid in America because he is in everything. He's the kid from It. He's the kid from Stranger Things. And rinse and repeat. He definitely will have a college fund. Also stars McKenna Grace and the lovely, beautiful, forever youthful Paul Rudd. It is written by Gil Genin and Jason Reitman. And Jason Reitman is also directing it. And, you know, Jason is the son of Ivan Reitman, who produced such hits as the first Ghostbusters, Ghostbusters 2, Twins, Kindergarten Cop, Dave, which I really love, Space Jams, Private Parts, Rinse and Repeat. But Jason Reitman, you know, he has credits of his own for sure. He did Juno, he did Up in the Air, Young Adult. I think he actually might have a, I think he has Academy Award nomination, but I think for Juno, but he didn't win. because it didn't get Best Picture. You'll see on the internet, if you haven't already, a lot of Twitter talk and whatever. I'm not going to bash the previous Carnation, the all-girl band group from the previous Ghostbusters that came out a couple of years ago, because I actually liked it. It wasn't as bad as people thought it kept saying it was. People made it out to be really, really bad, and I know why, but I'm not going to fight that battle again or get on that soapbox. But I'm not going to compare the two because they're completely different in the way that they've chosen to do this Ghostbusters. This is not an actual retelling of Ghostbusters per se. It seems to be more of the next generation. In fact, the Finn Wolfhard's character in it, he mentions, his name is Trevor, by the way, and he mentions that, you know, his mom, they got evicted from their home in Oklahoma, and they had to move to Somerville, Oklahoma, because they inherited a farmhouse from his late grandfather. And if you watch the trailer really closely, in the very end, Paul Rudd says, "Wait, who are you?" And we find out that Trevor is actually the grandson of Egon Spengler. I hope that's how you pronounce his name. Played by the late Harold Ramis. Because I don't remember him really just saying his name a whole lot. He was just kind of, I remember him going, Egon. And, you know, as we know, Harold Ramis has passed away. He was a really good actor. I really liked him, by the way. And I liked his character. So that's a nice little send up to him by making it revolve around his character in this. It looks, again, really good. Besides Paul Rudd, Joaquin Woodbine is in it, and Bill Murray and Dan Aykroyd and Ernie Hudson are also cast too. It'll be nice to see what they play. Sigourney Weaver comes back, as does Annie Potts. Now, the interesting thing, I don't know if you guys remember, but Annie Potts' Janine and Spengler supposedly had a little something going on. At least that was alluded to in those first two films. So I cannot wait to hear what the story is, what happened. Maybe she's their grandma. We'll find out, I guess. And I love Annie Potts, so it'll be good to see her. But again, you can watch the trailer on the site, and it will be in theaters again July 10th, 2020. And I'm already going to make with the apologies, because it's allergy season for me, and they are killing me slowly. And so I am hopped up on Benadryl. I am antihistamined out. So you're going to hear a lot of gulping. Gulping, is that the word? A lot of swallowing and a lot of sniffing. I promise you there's no coke involved. bad joke. Anyway, but I do have medicine head as well. So the corniness will have to do. In other community horror news, we have Lupita Nyong'o, the exquisite Lupita. She spoke at the Contenders in New York recently about a potential of the sequel. And here's what Lupita had to say. Lupita was just named Best Actress of the Year by the New York Film Critics Circle for her performance in Jordan Peele's Us. But despite her much-acclaimed performance as matriarch Adele Wilson and her tethered counterpart Red, as well as the film's overall commercial and critical success, Nyong'o is not too interested in revisiting her characters. She says, "No thanks, Red is dead." She emphatically declared during her turn at Deadline's Contenders New York. She goes on to explain how tackling the dual roles was very, very, very challenging. I guess so. A lot of areas there, girl. I quote, "I had to hold down both sidelines of the argument," she told audience at the DGA Theater. "I had to be the offender and the offended. It was about understanding the emotional landscape of each character, but also having a very strict discipline to play both physically and mentally." That's interesting, because no sequel, as far as I know, has been announced, but Lupita might not have to worry about it, but as we know, if they wave enough cash under these actors' noses, they always come back. I'm old enough to remember when Jamie Lee Curtis claimed the same thing, and not only is there a follow-up to Halloween, there's a follow-up to the follow-up. So wink, wink, okay, Lupita, okay. She says no. Segwaying right into the next news item, Jordan Peele's Us was named Best Film of 2019 by the AAFCA. Jordan Peele's Us has been named this year's best film by the African American Film Critics Association. The film, which garnered over $255 million globally, received three total wins, including Peele for Best Director, as I said, Lupita Nyong'o for Best Actress. Jordan Peele continued to raise the bar in horror Jordan continued to raise the bar in horror and film overall, stated AAFCA president, founder Gil Robertson. That was so sad. With Us, he once upended the horror genre. His centering on black nuclear family determined to survive a complex storyline in a genre where black family units have historically been unseen is extraordinary. He continues to push people to set boundaries with broad and bold storylines that bring a refreshing perspective to cinema overall and the genre specifically. Like I mentioned, it did gross $255 million globally. So there you go. Let's see. Next item. Intercanon Pictures nabs Creepticus. Intercanon Pictures has picked up director Hanse Whitmore's horror film Creepticus for domestic digital and DVD distribution. Jesus Christ. Guys, don't take medicine before you podcast. That's a warning. This film stars Eva Morrow and horror vet Bill Moseley. The film follows 17-year-old Elizabeth and her younger sister Sam, who are thrust into terrifying circumstances when they are forced to move into the deceased grandfather's house. Frightened beyond belief, they learn horrible things about their family history. Never mind the ghosts in the house. There is something far worse which takes an interest in them. A cannibalistic clown named Creepticus, played by Bill Moseley. Now, y'all know I really, really hate clowns with a passion, and so this will be no exception, but I'm kind of interested, so I'll probably watch it because of the fact that it mentions, you know, a haunted house. You know how I feel about a good old-fashioned ghost story. So it's a ghost story with a clown. Okay, I can do that. Shalay Lizette Brannon, Caitlin Williams, and Lance Paul co-star. Ed Kin will release Creepticus theatrically, on 10 screens in major markets on November 5th, which followed by the digital HD and DVD release on December 13th, which is today. So, there you go. It is produced by Eddie and Sarah Renner. Penn screenplay was produced by Nick Ford, Jacob McCobb, Paul of Ginger Knight Entertainment, Eddie Renner, and Hazen Whitmore. And that is your very new and shiny and fucked up tales of horror news from a chick on Benadryl. Enjoy.
I'm excited to spend the break with you guys.
I'm gonna go get Christmas lights for the dinner decor. Do Christmas lights expire?
Where's Helena?
Love you too.
Sorry. We shouldn't have let her go back by herself.
She's fine.
Come on, little.
No.
Some of my roommates are missing.
If I were missing, I'd want you to unleash the bloodhounds and track me down.
They were at the DKO fraternity last night.
Still creating problems, huh, right?
I will bring you to your knees.
You need a reminder of our power?
Go, 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 go!
mess with the wrong sisters.
If you haven't guessed by that trailer, we will be reviewing Black Christmas. But not the Black Christmas that is currently playing right now in theaters. I'll talk about that later. But to prepare for the release of Black Christmas 2019, I went back and watched the 1974 version and the 2006 version. And we'll compare them. And we'll talk about, discuss the new incarnation. The 1974 version, I kind of consider it kind of, if you give it much credit, and this is spoiler all the way through, except for the 2019 version. I won't spoil you too much about that. I'll only discuss what you can already see in the trailer, which is currently on youknowwhereharfortel.com. But anyway, I guess I'll put all three of the trailers up. That'll be neat. So check that out today. Anyway, Black Christmas, the 1974 version, is actually a Canadian slasher film, and it was produced and directed by Bob Clark. Now, if Bob Clark's name sounds really familiar to you, especially during this time of year, it should, because he put on screen our very lovely, if you're a person of my age, which many of you probably are, he made that classic, that one movie that you watch repeatedly during the holiday season. Now, I have a couple, because I'm corny like that. I kind of like Christmas movies, believe it or not. There are a bunch of horror Christmas movies that we'll talk about one also next week. And technically, will be the week before Christmas, but I'm still going to do a podcast. Anyway, Bob Clark was the guy that wrote and directed A Christmas Story. Yeah, Ralphie and the Leg Lamp and, you know, You Should Try Out and, you know, Sticking Your Tongue on the Pole, all that good stuff. But before that, he wrote this. And it was, well, he didn't write it. It was actually written by this guy called Roy Moore. Not that Roy Moore. This is a different person. But it stars the girl from Romeo and Juliet, the 1964 version, which they used to show in high schools all across America. I think they showed it in mine. I love Romeo and Juliet. I actually love Shakespeare, but anyway, that's neither here nor there. But Olivia Hussey, Cara Dula, the legendary Margot Kidder, Andrea Martin, which is really important because she came back and did the 2006 version, Marion Wallman, and John Saxon. Yeah, Nancy's dad plays, of course, a policeman in that version. In this version, same setup, it's a group of sorority sisters who have been receiving these threatening calls and eventually stalked and murdered by a deranged killer during the Christmas season. It's all inspired by this urban legend, The Babysitter and The Man Upstairs. I don't really know where that came from, but it's been around a long time, where it's a teenage girl, she's babysitting at home at night, and she finds, that there's, she's getting these calls, and they trace the calls, and, the caller says, check the children or whatever, and when they figure out who it is, they find out that the calls are coming from upstairs. There were actually a couple of different incarnations of that, and I think it actually inspired a couple of movies too. Besides that, there's a movie called When the Stranger Calls Back. Also a really good movie. It freaked me out when I was little. It came out like in 79. All this stuff is, I gotta brag on myself, it's before my time. But I remember that it was a big deal, like in the 80s and stuff, for people to call and did that. I remember, this is before Star 69. This is before cell phones. Phones were not traceable, kiddies. I mean, they were traceable, but it took a lot to trace the calls. Not like now, where, you hit the phone, the digital and the space, and then it dings back real quick. And, you can't hide now behind a phone. even with a burner phone, really. But back then, it was harder to trace the call. So you had a lot of prank calling and stuff going on. So who knows if that actually ever happened. But it inspired a mini of a horror story. And in this version, the phone calls are really weird. I mean, they're literally just strange and crazy phone calls. And the sorority sisters, you know, you have, if they run the gamut, you have Margot Kidder playing this wild, smoking, foul-mouthed kind of racy drunk girl. And then you have the really, you know, Olivia Halsey, she's kind of the girl next door. And then Andrea Martin seems like they were supposed to be, she was supposed to be kind of nerdy and reserved. And then, you know, Olivia Halsey's character is dating that care doula guy who plays this really, he's supposed to be at the university on some kind of piano thing. He's trying to audition for the conservatory or some crap. I don't know. They should have showed him playing prior to this or something, because they do have a scene with him playing, and they do have a scene with him playing, and it's really messed up because the that's the puppy, guys. And it's really off key. It's not good. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. It's a really, really well done horror movie for the times that it's in, and I gotta say it does hold up. So if you are inclined, if you've never seen it, you should see it. It's really sad because you just look at how far the technology has come. In that version, you had to be on the phone with the guy for like, I don't know, 15 minutes or something, because they used to physically have to see where the call was coming from, which region in the place. So they literally had this guy that was tracing the calls, and he was chasing down the phone line to see where it was, I guess I'll call it pinging from or whatever. It's insane. And there's a lot of red herrings thrown in there, because I gotta admit, a couple of times I had forgotten, because I hadn't seen the movie so long. I kind of see where they were going with trying to make the boyfriend be the killer, but it turns out it's not. It's actually this guy had escaped from a mental institution, and he was already in the house. What I don't like about it, I get that they were trying to do that, but the way it ends, we really don't know why he was there. But I get it. I get it. That's a really nice way to end on a frightening note. And I'm not sure, but I think they were probably trying to do a sequel, which I think they did like years and years later, which they shouldn't have. Because once you've waited that long for something to go through, as you know, it doesn't hold up well when you decide to make a sequel to it. But let's see, what else should I tell you guys about it if you hadn't seen it? I mean, like I said, it does stand up pretty well considering the times. It looks a little hokey because, again, this is 1974. So they used practical makeup, but it wasn't that great yet. I'm not sure if that's because of the time or the budget or whatever. But wait, no. Yeah, it did have an estimated budget of $620,000. I guess we should figure out how much that was in net time. But it's not bad. Again, the whole trope of the babysitter being stalked by the madman, it's, as you know, it's one that follows a mini horror movie. I mentioned When a Stranger Calls and With the Stranger Calls Back and all that. But it also had a tremendous influence on John Carpenter's Halloween, you know? I don't know if it did as well. I was trying to see in my notes if it did as well as Halloween did. But, you know, as you know, it has quite the cult following because all of us have seen it. And I'd seen it, but it had been years. So I was pretty pleased that I still could look at it from 2019 eyes and not go, oh my God, what is this? Which is what sometimes happens, but this does hold up. Let's see. I think that's all to really just bring out for Black Christmas 1974. So I made a two-night event of it, and I watched Black Christmas 2006. See, either I want to say 19 something or something. Anyway, Black Christmas 2006 was American and Canadian, and it was written and directed by Glenn Morgan. And Glenn Morgan, also X, but he actually did his most notable thing is Lore. I don't know if you guys are familiar with that, but that was on Amazon, and it also was a very famous podcast. He also did Willard, the new Willard back in the, I don't know what year that was. But he also is the executive producer of the Twilight Zone reboot from Jordan Peele's Monkey Paw. And he's done all the Final Destinations. And he's done some work on X-Files. So, you know, he's a horror dude. So, anyway. But it stars Katie Cassidy, Michelle Trachtenberg, Mary Elizabeth Weinstein, Oliver Hudson, Lacey Chabert, Kristen Cloak, and Andrea Martin made a return from the original 1974 version. But in this version, she's playing a different character, because if you remember, unfortunately, she didn't make it in the 1974. She got it in the end. I was pulling for her too, by the way. She was like one of my characters. I really liked her. But in this, okay, the 2006 version still has the same trope, you know, madman in the house, but they took it way further than the 74 version. The 74 version basically is just slash and kill the girls, right? This version had some, why not call it, it almost had an 80s kind of vibe to it. The fact that the filmmaker, Morgan, he tries to push the boundaries, and they really don't push the boundaries as much as they used to. And I don't mean in making it as bloody as they can. It was just the overall story got kind of gross for a second. Instead of, you know, well, there was a madman, but however, in this incarnation, the house was previously owned by a family, and for some reason, I guess it was supposed to be jaundice. I've never heard of jaundice making you remain yellow in skin. They have lights and stuff for that now and treatments, because I just have a brand new baby niece, and she was a little jaundice, and they put a light on her, she's fine. But anyway, in this incarnation, he remains yellow even when they bring him home from the hospital. His jaundice remains. Very weird. I don't know, but the mom doesn't like it or whatever, and so she just proceeds to just kind of mistreat this kid forever. And then when he's like 5, she offs his dad, her and her boyfriend offs his dad, and he's watching this all this happen when he's 5, and he's in the, you know, his dad had hidden a Christmas present for him, so he's like hiding, you know, he's back where the dad's hidden the present, and he's looking at the mom and the boyfriend kill the dad, the only one that was really nice to him. The mom is like batshit crazy, and she basically locks him in the attic forever. At least that's what she intends on doing. And then they have this is the part where it gets really dark and really sick, and I don't even know. I'm yet to decide on whether this is horror or just demented. Because there is a difference. But she wants a baby. She wants a new baby. And the new husband, he like passes out or something, and it doesn't work. She literally goes upstairs and has sex and conceives a child with her 12-year-old son. Yeah. It's fucked up. So anyway, I guess it's supposed to be like a year later, maybe, or something. She has this baby, and she loves this baby. She's doting on this baby. It's like really bizarre. I don't get it. But anyway, so he finally breaks out of the attic and kills everybody in the house except for his daughter sister. They put the daughter sister, you know, in a a mental place and they put him away too. And flash forward to, we find all of this has happened in this house, which is now currently a sorority house. Yeah, that's what they did with it. I don't think they would have done it, but that's what they did. Anyway, so in 2006, all this happened in like, supposedly like 1974, around that time, or maybe even a little later, because I think the guy's supposed to be 35 in 2006. So you do the math. Anyway, he does break out of the mental institution, and it follows the premise of the original one. He's calling them on the phone, but it's not so easy, which they did, which was really clever. They cleared it up because, you know, you can trace a cell phone like really quickly, and caller ID is a thing. So instead of that, he was using each girl that he murdered, he would use their cell phone to call the main line. So there you go. That was very clever. As far as being better, or I think they're both sufficient. And I'd intended to compare them to one another, and I don't think you can compare them. They're two different stories, and I think that was really pleasantly done, because I got to be honest, I hadn't seen the 2006 version, so I didn't expect a whole lot. So when I watched it and liked it, I was very shocked. I was like, wow, I actually like this. I didn't really care for any of the characters either way, whether they lived or died. I was like, kill them all. And I felt like I do that a lot, though. I was pulling for Andrea Martin because I wanted her to make it through. So she didn't make it through the original. I wanted her to make it through the remake, but she doesn't. But she doesn't get killed by either one of them. I mean, literally a freak accident took her out. So I was like, God damn it. I need to check. I wonder if she's in the third one. I hope she is. I haven't checked yet. Because, you know, I'm recording this actually the day before today. So it's actually Thursday, but it's Friday for you. But I'm hoping that this third version is as good as these previous two. A friend of mine, I won't tell her name, but she's not looking forward to it. She doesn't think she didn't think the trailer looked as good as the original one. I do think they're going to do a whole lot of changing, because even since 2006, there's the final girl, and now it's just, you know, everything's so, I want to say they don't want to step on any toes or be offensive to anything, even in art, or, you know, everybody's art is not for everybody, but you'll have people to complain and get mad. So I think they're going to toe the line very specifically, and there probably won't be a whole lot of things. In the 74 version, it was very, well, the lead character, Olivia Hussey's character, is pregnant, and she wants to have an abortion, and the boyfriend's like, do not kill my baby, you know, just telling her all about what she can and cannot do with her body. So that was that, you know, that's problematic, right? But it was 1974, so of course it was problematic. But he was actually, the director was trying to give her a voice, but her like, no, I don't care. Do you want to get married? I have dreams and goals. So that was well done. Girl power, right? The 2006 version, it's not as archaic as that, where, you know, you won't do this, you won't do this, you gotta marry me. But they have Oliver Hudson, oddly enough, running around, keep calling the girls bitches, y'all, bye y'all, bitches. And it's just like, but I gotta admit, even into the 2006, and I was like 29 or something, gosh, I'm so old, but I wouldn't have been as upset. I don't think anybody even noticed it. It was like, okay, he's an asshole, so he's calling. You know what I'm saying? It was that kind of vibe going on. Flash forward to now, post everything, and in this era that we're, this incarnation, and we should be, I don't think there'll be anything problematic. And I think in this case, it might take away from it just a slight bit, because I think they're going to walk this very fine line and they're not going to want to do anything that can be deemed problematic. And so I don't know whether the film is going to suffer a little bit because it's going to be overly corrected or whatever, but I'm sure I'm going to piss somebody off by saying that, but I'm just saying, I don't know how it's going to work. It's a slasher film. And you know, and our whole genre is about the final girl, right? So it'll be interesting to see what they do with it. In the trailer, it looked perfectly fine. I kind of like the idea of them banding together to fight them off. They tried to do that in the 2006 version as well. It didn't work out. I don't know if it will this time either, but everybody looked to be a little bit of a girl that can take care of herself in each character that they showed in the trailer. So it'll be interesting to see. It might be a battle, and I'm for that. I just need it to be fun and scary. So far, people that have seen it, it hasn't received the highest ratings. I'm not going to read anybody else's ratings. I'm just going to make my own opinion. And I'm not even pissed off that they didn't send me a screening certificate. So, Black Christmas is playing right now, the 2019 version, in a theater near you. And that's the end of the Benadryl Black Christmas versus Black Christmas versus Black Christmas review.
I have to get to the truth of what happened that night. I am for truth, no matter who tells it. I'm for justice, no matter who it's for or against. Eighteen years, 10 months, 24 days. That's how long Warren Cave has sat in prison for the murder of Chuck Berman. I helped seal Warren's fate with a series of articles. But is there an innocent man in prison? And did I lead that charge? Always standing on a
land atop the land. You portrayed me as a privileged psychopath. Now I live in a house full of men who breathe to lie. And I could smell yours before you even started talking.
How could a mother and two daughters sleep through such a violent encounter? And they never recovered the murder weapon.
What are you hiding? You leave it, or I can make your life miserable in here.
There is a monster inside every one of us. You terrify me.
What about you?
What's in there?
We're playing with people's lives. Are you ready for the consequences?
You think all the secrets came out during the trial?
You tell Parnell to back away. You messed with her family.
You have no idea what I've done to my daughters.
Families, they take care of each other.
To get to the truth of what happened that night.
The people will get their show.
For Truth Be Told, which is our TV watching moment. Truth Be Told is currently streaming on Apple TV Plus right now, and it's based on a novel called Are You Sleeping by Kathleen Baker, and it was produced by? I knew that if I hadn't said anything. God damn it. I wanted to say, is Reese? Okay, Octavia Spencer is actually starring and producing it. For some reason, I don't know why the hell I thought it was one of Reese Witherspoon's things. But anyway, Octavia Spencer stars as Poppy Parnell. She's an investigative reporter who has a hit true crime podcast. Haha. And which made me even more interested. And Aaron Paul, our Breaking Bad Aaron Paul, he plays Warren Crave. He's a convicted murderer and the subject of Poppy's podcast. Lizzie Kaplan plays two parts in it. She's supposedly twins called Josie and Lainey Berman. She's the daughters of the guy Warren Crave that was murdered in the very first episode, and we're trying to unravel his murder. Elizabeth Perkins plays their mom and Warren's wife. Michael Beach is Poppy's husband, Ingram. Mekhi Phifer plays her ex-boyfriend, who was a former detective. And Tracy Thomas plays Desiree Scoville, is her older sister. And the guy Ron Cephas Jones plays her dad, Shreve. Let's see. And Hanfi Wood, I don't know her, but she's really good. She plays the youngest of the three sisters in it. And she's really good. I was very pleasantly surprised because I had never seen her before. And I was like, oh, goodness, who is this girl? But she's good. And shout outs to Tammy Roman, who is from If You're Old As I Am. She was on The Real World when we were growing up. And she's really good as the stepmom, the younger stepmom of all of them. Anyway. Oh, and I want to shout out Annabelle Chiora, who I haven't seen in a whole lot of things. So she's made her way back onto screen, which is really good. Anyway, so this is a really good something to stream if you have Apple TV, which I keep saying about get these trials, borrow somebody's password, whatever you have to do. But you need to watch these little shows on there because they're doing really well. Servant is also on Apple TV Plus. I can't recommend it anymore. We're getting slowly to find out what's going on. I'm waiting on M. Night Shyamalan to mess it up. He might not. It's already been removed renewed for its second season already. So here's hoping. But anyway, truth be told, it's really good so far. We're four episodes in, and I'm very interested now to find out who it actually killed this Warren Crave guy. The original story is that Aaron Paul's character, his son, killed him. And no, he's not his son. Is he his son? No. Hold on. I'm getting the names confused. No. The one that was killed, his last name is Berman. And it comes to find out that, should I spoil you guys or not? I'm trying to decide on what to tell you and what not to tell you because I do want you to watch the show. Let's just say things are not always what they seem. And some of the characters that you think, oh, wow, okay, they really have done something. And you do go, oh, wow, okay, so that does that. And what's good about the show is that you will start to scratch suspects off the list and add stuff to their columns or whatever. I like that kind of stuff. It's a really good whodunit. I want to know more about the deceased guy, and hopefully we'll get to know more about him, because you gotta really like piss somebody off to just, you know, for the length that they went to murder him. It's very interesting. The reason why they thought that, you know, Aaron Paul's character did it is because he didn't like the two twins. All of them were high school students. And he basically says that they just, you know, acted like they were just so prim and proper and they had the perfect family, and it annoyed him. And he would break into their house looking for drugs, he said, because I guess they had drugs or something. That wasn't really cleared up really well. So his fingerprints were just like all over the house. So when the father ends up dead, they just assume, you know, which prints shouldn't be here. Why are your prints here? And, you know, he had no excuse. I think it's a little thin, because he should have just told them that. You know, I have never, I hadn't heard them say that they had a murder weapon or anything. It's just a lot. And I'm like, really? He went to jail based on this? But anyway. Octavia Spencer is Poppy. She's, you know, Octavia Spencer is Octavia Spencer. She's just good. So she's a little annoying because she's really nosy, but she's supposed to be. She's a reporter, and that's what we usually are. I used to be a reporter too in a previous life. But it's a good show, and again, it's playing right now on Apple TV. A new episode, which will be episode 5, will be available to stream today. A new episode of Servant is also playing today. And Nancy Drew, which we are also watching on TV watching, has ended for the winter, and it will be back in January. And it has received a full season. So there'll be 10 new episodes of Nancy Drew. And I thought it was really cool that they ended it with Nancy Drew and the Case of the Staircase. Yeah, they did it. They finally, you know, hat tip to that. It's also a pretty good show playing on the CW, and it's doing a lot of, you know, callback to the novels, and it's having that supernatural element. It's really good. Also, Supernatural is also been really good this season for its final one. Kaz is finally came back, last night, because it's Friday, in the episode, and him and Dean have got to reconcile, so that'll be good. But let's see. I think that's all. Oh gosh, we went way over our time. The Benadryl has really messed it up for everybody involved. But anyway, I would ask you to follow me on Instagram at @TheHorrorFatale and Twitter at @HorrorFatale. Good night, dolls, and sweet nightmares until next week.
Jingle bells swing and jingle bells ring, snowing and blowing up bushels of fun. Now the jingle hop has begun. Jingle bell, jingle bell rock. Jingle bells chime and jingle bell time, dancing and prancing in jingle bell.